We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we're for the people of Missouri. We're for brewmasters, stockbrokers, beauty queens, and truck drivers. Whatever you do, if you're a Missourian, we're for you. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we've got Missouri covered.
Border Patrol is presented by Walker Medical Linen Services, locally owned and operated, and HLAC certified, meeting the highest industry standards. Walker has partnerships with hospitals, surgery centers, and medical clinics in and around the metro area. Walker Medical Linen Services in Kansas City and online at walkermls.com.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Let me at least mention something that will put me in a good mood. How's that sound to you guys?
I think that sounds like a good idea.
And I think we were very lucky. You not being here on Friday has led to something good happening today.
Oh boy, okay.
Because, this may shock you, but Tequila Harry's wanted to bring food in, and when I saw that you weren't here on Friday, I said, no, let's do Monday. And so they didn't bring food on Friday. They're bringing food in today. So we're gonna have Mexican food here.
I saw that email from Ted Wiley, and yeah. It just lifted my spirits.
I said, Friday won't work. We got to do Monday, because if Tequila Harry's going to bring in, I want all of us to enjoy it.
That's music to my to my mouth.
Tequila Harry's Casey, wow. Really descriptive there, music in your mouth. But also, I would like to mention something that's very important to me, also having to do with Tequila Harry's, before we chat with Matt Derrick. Coming up tomorrow night, I would invite you to go eat some delicious Mexican food at Tequila Harry's anytime, all day long. I'm going to be out there at night having dinner with my family. Also with Jake, if you'd like to catch up with Jake, he's going to be having dinner. Because Tequila Harry's is kind enough to be donating 10% of sales all day long and all night long to the Julie Ontivero St. John Deborah Douglas Gutierrez Memorial Scholarship for the Hispanic Development Fund. And we were able to give scholarships to 5 students last year. We'll want to do more this year. And so if you would like to support my mom's scholarship and Jake's mom's scholarship, then all you have to do is come out and have Taco Tuesday with us at Tequila Harry's. Anytime you go, whatever you order, whatever you eat, 10% of the sales will go to my mom's scholarship fund and Jake's mom's scholarship fund through the Hispanic Development Fund. And I'll be out there. I'm gonna try to get all my family to go. That means my kids will have to go someplace with me, which they will resist, but I'll tell them it's for grandma. So we'll be out there. And so thank you so much to Tequila Harry's for doing that. And if you'd like to be a part of that, just go out and eat at Tequila Harry's. And I'm going to be there in the dinner hour, and I'll bring some stuff to give away. And we'll have some fun, raffle art, whatever. And you're going to go by there with your family. You know when you're going to be, around what time?
I have to talk to see what time they want to go and everything, because usually Taco Tuesdays Tuesday is taco night. So
let's see if we can do dinner, and then we'll raffle you off to a lucky person. Just they could have the use of Marco for 24 hours. I don't know what for, but you know, you could do things around the house, gambling advice, whatever. Someone, if they want you to produce something, we can raffle Marco. I think you can go home with Marco, so that'd be a great reason to come out there. And then 10% of the sales will go to Tequila Harry's. Let's say hello to Matt Derrick right now from CheeseDigest.com. Hello, Matt.
Steven, Nate, Marco, how are you all doing this morning?
Nah, I think football's stupid. What about you?
It can be.
Yeah.
it can be.
Yeah. You're here to talk about the Chiefs, but you are a Mizzou fan. Sum that up. I don't even want to ask any questions, but I just sum it up.
Hey, on the bright side, if you know, trying to find something, amazingly enough, that's not even top 5 most bizarre and painful Mizzou losses of all time. So,
and the defense was excellent.
The defense has been very good this season. I mean, you know, hey, a little shaky against K-State, but other than that, I have had no complaints with the
defense. That'll happen when the offense throws 4 consecutive interceptions. But let me tell you this. I'm going to say it again. I don't care how good they are. After watching this weekend, I'll say it again. I said it when Drinkwitz was settling for the field goal, and I get it. I understand it. It's defensible. It's a great debate. Never depend on a kicker when you don't have to. I don't care who they are. Just don't do it. Because kickers, at the end of the day, are evil people that will absolutely steal your soul. Okay?
It's harsh, but you know
it
what?
Is harsh.
There's some validity to it.
Yeah, you're right. All right, let's get to the Chiefs. And I want you to be honest. Again, you're a truth teller. That's why we have you on the show. Is there really anything that Chris Jones could have said to warrant a flag being thrown in a crucial situation that helped decide the game? And I know they're trying to. I don't know. I don't know what they're trying to do. You got people ripping each other's heads off out on the football field. But he said mean words, so it's 15 yards. What are we talking about here?
Yeah, and we did not get a great explanation from the referees on exactly what happened from the officials. So, and I think that's unfortunate. I mean, just come out and tell us exactly what was said. I mean, abusive language. I mean, I don't know what that means. I mean, unless he threatened his family or something, and this was like from Taken or something like that. I don't know what he could have said, and it would. And honestly. To me, watching it, it felt like accumulation penalty because you saw Chris Jones was a little slow getting off of Matt Ryan, and then there was kind of a little bit of the jawing and the staring. If you don't have all three of those elements, maybe the official does let it go. Because at any one of those points, I thought, gosh, Chris really just needs to get out of this situation because he's going to get a flag. And maybe it was just the length of it more than anything, but a situation like that, I mean, to me, it's got to be pretty severe because – there was, I mean, outside of, like I said, Chris having a little bit more time getting off of Matt Ryan off after they didn't play, wasn't anything physical. There wasn't any pushing or shoving, anything like that. Words? I don't know. I mean, I don't know what he could have said, but I would like to know what he said.
Yeah, the only thing about it to me is, like, the NFL's made it clear this is a precedent that they are sticking with. I mean, this isn't brand new. They've been throwing flags for very touchy, taunting type situations for a while now, you know.
And hey, we have learned at least the last 24 hours that you know you will get more penalized more by saying something hurtful to an opposing quarterback than taking out your frustrations and violently beating two tablets to death.
Right. So. Right. And apparently it's okay. It's more serious to verbally abuse a quarterback as opposed to grab a quarterback by the face mask like the like what happened to Mahomes.
So what was the explanation there? Because I do think now Mahomes got the guy's face mask too, but they threw a flag on that side of the field, did they not? Did they just decide to pick it up, or were both of those flags for the holding penalty and they never threw a flag on the face mask in the first place?
That's a great question because the officials, again, never explained that one. Normally, if they pick up a flag, they at least say that there was no flag for face mask on that
right.
side. So it does make you wonder. I never saw the flag. I mean, I know that the game of the announcer said that there was the flag on the play. I didn't see it, so I'm assuming it was there. Maybe you're right, Nate. Maybe it was two flags for the same penalty. But if they picked it up. I mean, they do tend to, let those unintentional, fleeting face masks go, especially if they're not completely sure. And maybe it was that they were like, oh, it went both ways. But if it went both ways, then throw three flags, three penalties, it's offsetting. I mean, that's a completely different scenario. So it certainly seemed like there was a penalty there. Should have been offsetting. But, as I said, you're going to get bad calls. I mean, there's going to be games that things are going to go against you, and good teams overcome those. And yesterday, the Chiefs weren't a very good team.
Okay, so let's get into some of the other things that contributed to the loss. The special teams were awful. They're anything but special. All the way from Sky Moore being unable to receive a punt, Matt Amendola looking like Lynn Elliott. I mean, it was I can't believe I said that name. But let's focus on the decision to try the fake field goal. And I know you're trying to catch a team by surprise. It didn't look like, even if the ball was thrown well, that the play was there. But am I wrong just to think, hey, if you don't trust your kicker and it's fourth down, yes, let's give Mahomes one more crack at this thing as opposed to what they did?
Yeah, I think that play was, what, fourth and 10? So I get that maybe trickery you think is your best option. I'm with you. If I've decided I'm going to go for it on that in that situation, I'm probably going to put the ball in the hands of Patrick Mahomes rather than Tommy Townsend. And especially in the situation that you're in there. I mean, it's a tight ball game. You can go. You don't really want to give any momentum to the Colts, and that's all your special teams have been doing all day. I thought it was a pretty risky call in that situation, and it certainly doesn't show any faith whatsoever in Matt Amendola. I mean, that would just probably further erode that guy's confidence that, you know, you're not even willing to let him take that field goal shot there. But, you know, execution wasn't great either. And that, to me, you know, stems back to, remember, you know, the Chiefs made a conscious decision this season to try and get faster on defense. And as a byproduct, you know, they want to get faster on special teams too. But it also meant that they don't have a ton of experience out there. They got a lot of young guys playing meaningful snaps on special teams. And Sky Moore's a great example of that. I mean, a kid who has a ton of athleticism, but almost zero experience returning punts in his career until he got to Kansas City. And we saw some shaky moments up in training camp with him fielding some balls. And that's a very tough sky in Indianapolis when they opened that route. And I think the Colts got exactly what they wanted. I mean, they wanted to slow down the Chiefs' offense. And it's tough in that building when that roof is open. And they got exactly what they wanted.
It's a tough sky. I saw what you did there, Matt.
Very good.
You know what? That was completely unintentional on a Monday morning, but I'll take the point.
Not buying it.
And honestly, they did look – I mean, somebody sent me a tweet suggesting that Kelsey, the sun got in his eyes, and that's why he didn't catch that pass. But I think Kelsey even told you he should have caught that. But it was at least a somewhat unique environment with the sun and the roof open and everything else. But I just – it's hard to believe so many things had to happen for the Colts to win that game, and they all happened. Everything that needed to fall into place. But what gets lost in this deal, unfortunately, is how well the defense played until that final drive. But the defense did get them off the field, but Chris Jones, in mean words, gave the Colts another chance. So the defense did get a stop at the end. Now they couldn't get a stop afterwards, which was bad. But Nick Bolton was fabulous. The Darius Harris stepped up and had a couple of big hits. But you look at that defense, the way they played, and consider they didn't have arguably the number one or at least the number two cornerback in McDuffie. They didn't have Willie Gay. They didn't have Mike Dana. I am impressed. And I think about, or you can dream about, okay, when they get healthy, get all these guys back, and they continue to get better with the youthful parts of the defense, that defense looks really, really good. And that's at least something you can take away from that game, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that to me is the one thing that absolutely is getting lost is just how good this defense has been through the first three games. There hasn't been anything to complain about. And yesterday, they certainly were good. I mean, with the pressure that they were getting on Matt Ryan, which you knew that they had to do, yeah, they were doing some blitzes, but you know what? They also produced big plays. I mean, they got two turnovers out of that. They had the big fourth down stops. I mean, you stopped Jonathan Taylor on fourth down. That's big. Nick Bolton had a great game. Darius Harris played well. I thought Le'Jarius Sneed was great. I mean, up and down the line, I mean, Colin Saunders had a really nice game with some limited snaps. Up and down, I mean, it was solid play. And even that last drive, like you said, they got off on a fourth down. They should have been out of there. And after that, other than that, they allowed that Colts team to 4.5 yards of play on that drive. I mean, that was just the very definition of just barely moving down the field. And, I mean, at times it looked like Nick Bolton was in the huddle with Matt Ryan, as well prepared as the teams were. The only thing that they forgot to do yesterday is they forgot Jelani Woods was on the team. And they didn't account for him a couple of times. And other than that, you stop one of those plays, and it's a darn near perfect game for the defense. I mean, the defense gave up 13 points. I mean, I'm not counting that first touchdown on them. That's 13 points. You give up 13 points in the NFL today, you should win.
On the flip side, this offense trying to get into rhythm, and maybe we got our expectations thrown off a little bit because of the dominant performance they had in week one against Arizona. Because if you go back before that, we were talking about how it might be a little bit of a work in progress on offense when Mahomes has an entirely new group of wide receivers to throw to. And, you know, some young guys in the backfield as well with Pacheco. Are we just seeing it now that there's going to be a little bit of a growing process as they get on the same page? Or do you see some red flags on the offense that we should be concerned about long term?
I mean, the only thing there were a couple of things that concerned me about on the offensive side yesterday. I mean, one was certainly that they wanted to run the football and they couldn't. And that's a concern, because that was pretty atrocious yesterday. And with Colts still missing some guys, I mean, if Shaquille Leonard's not out there, I mean, you should be able to run the football more effectively against the Colts.
Oh, he wasn't out there, Matt, but, you know, I feel like I was watching the game with him, considering they showed him on TV, I think, 45 times. I'm sorry, that was getting to be irritating. I apologize.
He got some screen time. No,
good
no
God.
But I feel like that the biggest opportunity the Chiefs missed was in the first half offensively. And I think we saw, you know, what I know fans love about Mahomes, but sometimes it can be the downside, is I think he spent a lot of the first half looking for big plays downfield. And with what the Colts were doing defensively, I mean, a lot of it is exactly what the Chiefs are going to see with the two high shells. I mean, and they built this offense to try and counter that. And we heard all offseason about spreading the ball around and taking what's there. And to me, Mahomes did not do that in the first half. I mean, and especially after the one deep that they missed. That one, it looked like the Colts tightened up after that. They were like, we're not letting anything get past us again. And yet, you know, Mahomes still, you could see his eyes were still looking downfield, trying to hit the big plays rather than taking what was there. And certainly, you know, there's probably, you know, our reasons to argue that the offensive line wasn't great yesterday. Orlando Brown had some tough moments at times. There was some pressure. It wasn't, you know, consistent all the time, but there was pressure. But there was time to get rid of the football. There were plays in the short and intermediate spaces, and you just didn't see Mahomes start taking advantage of that until the second half. And I feel like the Chiefs could have been more efficient in the first half if they had, I mean, for lack of a better, you know, metaphor, you just got to eat your vegetables sometimes in order to get your dessert. And I felt like Mahomes was looking for dessert most of the first half rather than eating his vegetables and just moving the chains.
I feel seen right now. I don't know if you're talking to me specifically, but that's fine. We can move past that. What's your reaction to the exchange of words between Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy at just before the half?
I mean, I get fans with all of the smoke out there that want to see fire between Mahomes and Bieniemy, and we've never gotten a good explanation on or off the record from anybody explaining, you know, what the relationship is. But the one thing that just struck me about that yesterday is that it seemed like attacking the messenger, because as we were reminded again this week, Andy Reid's got 51% of the vote, and I tell you, the other 49% doesn't matter. There is nothing that happens on that football field, play calling wise, that doesn't happen with the express consent of Andy Reid. And if Mahomes was frustrated with the play calling and what happened, the sequence at the end of the first half, I guess it's going up the chain. It's kind of, you know, hey, his boss, and maybe, you know, Patrick certainly I don't think going to take out any frustrations on Andy Reid on the sideline, but I don't know why you get mad at Eric Bieniemy, because Andy Reid's the one that called the play.
It reminds me of, like, you know, sometimes in a family dynamic, kids will feel emboldened to talk back to one of their parents, but maybe not the other one. It was like, you know, Patrick Mahomes will yell at Eric Bieniemy. He ain't yelling at Andy Reid. So when Andy Reid came over and said, hey, you know, we're going to the locker room, it was like, all right, everybody's good. And then they went to the locker room. I thought it was what was just as interesting, even though Andy Reid doesn't raise his voice and scream and yell, when he goes over and has a word with Dave Tobe after that penalty on the extra point, you can even see the look on Dave Tobe's face like, oh, no.
Special teams are horrible all the way around.
Yeah. That's the equivalent of some coaches like MFing you up and down the sideline. Just Andy Reid walking over going, hey, pal, get your stuff together. All right? You know?
Man, you don't want, you don't want Grandpa getting mad at you.
You don't want Big Red mad at you.
Would you kindly respond to a couple of tweets, Matt Derrick?
If I can, I certainly will.
Okay. Shady McCoy, LeSean McCoy, actually posted this on Instagram.
There was
a story about Mahomes and Bieniemy arguing, and Shady McCoy posted, "All Bieniemy does is argue with the players, knows nothing about passing or play calling." Your thoughts?
I mean, you know, again, I kind of feel like it's shooting the messenger. Because it goes back even to, you know, a lot of the things that McCoy and Le'Veon Bell, I mean, some of their criticisms they've had, but, you know, McCoy's criticisms of Bieniemy. You know what? What Eric Bieniemy that benched LeSean McCoy? It was Andy Reid. And, you know, I think it's, and at times there's probably a lot of things that Eric Bieniemy takes the heat for that are not his fault, that he has no say in. But he just kind of takes it. And you know what? I mean, you get paid a lot of money. I mean, sometimes that's a job is you get paid. And trust me, I've had jobs like that where my job was to take the blame for the people who made dumb decisions above me.
Oh, yes.
But
I've had that job, too.
Yeah, but I LeSean McCoy, for some reason, has a vendetta against Eric Bieniemy that I don't understand.
Okay, now I'd like everyone here to respond to this since-deleted tweet. We saw the Denver Broncos in a knockdown, drag-out, 11-10 game with the San Francisco 49ers. Well, during the game, Shannon Sharp tweeted, talking about Jerry Jeudy, "Jeudy does all this route running in the offseason and can't catch an effing pass." Jerry Jeudy then retweeted that and said, "And you be doing all that talking during the season while your breath be smelling like your ass." Hashtag big win. So, could you please respond to that now?
Oh, man, I'm just going to give props.
Right.
I mean, I got nothing but mad respect for that.
Wow. I like the hashtag big win right after it, which is...
Yeah, I mean, you end with a positive, you know, kind of moving on to Cincinnati. I mean, yeah, that was well played.
And of all the things that happened yesterday, and there were some surprising things, 38-10, Jacksonville over the Chargers... Yeah. And Trevor Lawrence and that offense looked like a juggernaut under Doug Peterson's watchful eye against the Chargers. I get it. Justin Herbert is injured, and so the offense wasn't clicking. But look at the numbers their offense put up. They ran the ball down their throats. Trevor Lawrence looked like the number one overall pick. That was shocking, right?
Well, it certainly, I think, makes what the Colts did against late against the Jaguars make a little bit more sense. And you're right, there were some extenuating circumstances, but Justin Herbert didn't give up 158 rushing yards. The Jags, I mean, you know, I'll tell you what, you know, maybe Urban Meyer needs to be the coach of the year because getting rid of him, look what it did.
Yeah. Well, Doug Peterson knows what he's doing. And knows a good quarterback when he sees it. They're going to be an interesting team to watch, and a team that the Chiefs play later on. Hey, Matt, thanks for the time. We appreciate it, man.
Always a pleasure, guys. Take care, everybody.
That's Matt Derrick from ChiefsDigest.com. Up next, we'll talk to Jeff Kerr, NFL writer for CBS.com, after this on WHB.
Back to throw. Blitz coming. Throws over the middle. Caught by Tyler Boyd. Breaks away from two defenders. Sprinting down the middle of the field to the 20.
Get in, baby.
15, 10, 5.
Yeah.
Lunges for the end zone. Touchdown.
Tannehill. Play fake. Throws. Right flat. Swain. All alone. Touchdown. Titans.
Lamar in the shotgun. What's the throw? Blitz pressure coming. Jackson lobs for the end zone. He's looking for Andrews. Reaches up. He makes the catch. Touchdown, Mark Andrews.
Goff, straight drop. Zadarius Smith blitzes. Goff, he'll hurl it up. Josh again, and he caught this one. Yes, he did. Josh Metellus' first National Football League interception has daggered the Detroit Lions.
Second and 20, 18 seconds left. Allen,
he goes down. No, he gets back up and tosses it to McKenzie, who's trying to get to the sideline, has to cut it back in and is tackled inbounds with 7 seconds left. Ingram, the tackle.
We're not going to get this off.
Three, two, one. It's over.
Get it done.
It's over.
Dropping is Trevor. Looking. Fires corner of the end zone. That ball is going to be caught for the touchdown in the back of the end zone. Touchdown, Jaguar.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you so much for joining us. Let's take a break from talking about the Chiefs blowing that game against the Colts, although we'll talk a little bit about Patrick Mahomes. But up next, we have Jeff Kerr, NFL writer for CBS Sports. You can follow him on Twitter. Jeff Kerr CBS is his handle. Jeff, good morning. How are you?
Steven, how's it going, my friend? Tough loss for the Chiefs yesterday, though.
Oh, yeah, it was a bizarre game, and several things had to happen inexplicably for the Chiefs to lose that game, and they all happened. And so now, of course, everyone wants to – now's the time. Oh, see, the Chiefs aren't the same without Tyreek Hill. See, the Chiefs aren't contenders, this, that, and everything else. All the haters come out. But I saw a tweet – that you had that I found interesting because we were talking about Trevor Lawrence a little bit earlier. The best touchdown to interception ratio right now in the league, Patrick Mahomes, 8 touchdowns, 1 interception. Trevor Lawrence, 6 touchdowns, 1 interception. Just from your vantage point, how do you view Patrick Mahomes? How do you view the Chiefs after 3 games of the season?
So I will say this. I do think they kind of missed Tyreek Hill yesterday, more for the big play ability to get out of things. But overall, I said to Marco right before I came on, I was kind of, you know, I had a tweet lined up in the queue when Denver was going to lose that game. They didn't lose, but I'm like, you know, the Chiefs are never going to lose the AFC West with Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes, right?
Right.
Because the AFC West does not look impressive at all. The only impressive team is the Kansas City Chiefs through 3 weeks, and they had a big win over the Cardinals. And, again, I don't know what to make of the Cardinals right now, but a win's a win. They beat the Chargers. The Chargers looked terrible against Jacksonville yesterday, and it wasn't because of Justin Herbert's injury. They just did not look like a football team that has a lot of depth. So if you're going by the best team in the AFC West through 3 weeks, it's still the Kansas City Chiefs. I don't like how they lost to the Indianapolis Colts, but I think they're set up at least to beat Tampa Bay because Tampa Bay doesn't have anything going on offense right now.
Well, I'm with you. The Chiefs are the best team in the division. They're going to win the division, but what they do after that and what they do in the postseason remains to be seen. But let me hit on what you talked about with Jacksonville and the Chargers. And that's a great point you made because I've been talking about that. People will assume, oh, the Chargers lost because Herbert was injured and they'll be fine. Their defense got worked by Jacksonville. Trevor Lawrence looked like the number one overall pick. They were able to run the football at will against the Chargers. That's what's surprising. So I'd like to get your thoughts on how much of it was the Chargers, how much of it was, hey, Jacksonville has a lot of talent, has a lot of high draft picks, and now they have a head coach that actually knows what he's doing.
This is the amazing part of the Jaguars blowing out L.A. L.A. had 10 days to get ready for this football team. And Doug Peterson just ran circles around Brandon Staley. It felt like Doug Peterson prepped Jacksonville to get ready for that game. You know, Jacksonville could have came off that big high over Indianapolis and said, you know what? Yeah, we're 1-1. We're a decent football team. We're not going to be as bad as people say we are. No, you know what? They saw the AFC South up for grabs, and they decided to take it and just run with the fire. And look, it was the Chargers' defense, and I know the Chargers' defense is injured too, and I know there was Khalil Mack was banged up, Joey Bosa had to leave the game, but overall, Jacksonville's offensive line didn't give up a sack yesterday. First time since 2007, they won 2 consecutive games without giving up a sack. Trevor Lawrence, I don't even think he was touched yesterday. James Robinson ran all over him. The Chargers' run defense still isn't that great. There's a lot better than last year. I know J.C. Jackson's still banged up. Herbert being banged up did play a role in it, but the Chargers can't run the ball. They just look like a discombobulated mess right now, and I don't know what to make of it because I think they're still a really good team. I think they're going to be in it, you know, when all is said and done. But Brandon Staley's got to come up with better excuses than why he played Justin Herbert in a 38-10 game than well, Justin wanted to be in there with his teammates. No, that's your franchise quarterback. The reason you have a shot in the AFC West is because of Justin Herbert. The Raiders aren't a great team, and Denver's got a Super Bowl caliber defense, but I don't know what Nathaniel Hackett's doing with that offense. So you got to make sure you protect Justin Herbert at all costs.
You know, it's funny talking about the offensive mess with the Broncos. It was just two years ago that 4 weeks into the season, Russell Wilson was like everybody's favorite for MVP. And then he started throwing picks. Everything started going south in Seattle. And the world changes quickly in this league. And I'm just kind of curious as we look at it now, like you can make a lot of big judgments off of the first 3 weeks into the season. But in your opinion, like how much do we even really know about this league 3 weeks in right now?
I'll tell you what, I don't know much. I'll say that. I know there's probably a lot of bad teams in this league. I don't know how many elite teams there are. Being from the Philadelphia area, I cover the Eagles every week. They're 3-0, and I think they're a really good team, but I just keep looking at it as who have they played, who will they play, because they have an easy schedule, so I don't even know how good they actually are. I think they're good. But, you know, Kansas City's got to play a really tough schedule. I still think they're a good team. I still think the Chargers are a good team. The only thing I know in this league so far is I kind of want to toot my horn over the Raiders hiring Josh McDaniels and Dennis Allen being hired as the Saints head coach. And those two should not have gotten second head coaching jobs in the NFL, and they did. And their teams are combined 1-5. Like, those teams are terrible. And it's because of their head coach. There's no way the Raiders should be 0-3.
Oh, but they are, and it's glorious.
Yeah. Yeah, they are.
Okay, and so you mentioned Philadelphia, and, like, I was surprised, and this is all based on fantasy football, I was surprised that Devontae Smith didn't do anything week one, but, boy, did he do something yesterday. He looked like a number one guy. And Jalen Hurts has put up huge numbers. And at the same time, I'm watching Lamar Jackson, my fantasy quarterback. You had this tweet, the second player in NFL history to have 4 touchdown passes, 100 rushing yards, and a rushing touchdown in a game. Randall Cunningham did it in 1990. And what was this? In back-to-back games, he's been remarkable. He's done something that no player in NFL history has thrown for 3 touchdowns and rushed for 110 yards twice in the same season. And Lamar's done it in consecutive games. And so there have been other obviously great performances, but those two guys have been right up there with the most impressive players we've seen. You see Jalen Hurts up close. How much do you believe in him and Lamar Jackson? Is this just him in this contract year going, all hell's breaking loose and Baltimore's going to pay for it?
Well, I'm fortunate I get to see the Eagles and the Ravens a lot. I go to a lot of Ravens games too. So I look at it as Lamar's always been this good of a player, but it feels like an Aaron Judge type thing with the Yankees, right?
Right.
You didn't pay him. Now he's not going to fold. Lamar Jackson just isn't – he's not cut from that cloth. What Lamar Jackson can do is, okay, you're going to pay me. I'm going to make you pay more for me, or somebody's going to pay more for me. I still think it's going to be Baltimore at the end of the day. But Lamar Jackson's just a phenomenal player. He's the reason why I have the Ravens as a dark horse Super Bowl team in the AFC. That offense is tailor-made for him to succeed. 10 touchdown passes already in 3 games. He's just running all over the place. They don't have a run game to speak of. Their offensive line is still trying to figure things out, even though it's getting better by the week. Really, the Ravens are a fourth-quarter collapse against the Dolphins, which wasn't really Lamar's fault. It was their defense just letting Tyreek Hill go crazy. They're really that away from being 3-0 and being talked about as probably the best team in the AFC right now. But I love what Baltimore has done with this team. I think they got a huge test this week in Buffalo. I think that's their litmus test. And if they can beat them at home, I think we're going to hear a lot of hype about the Baltimore Ravens. And I got to be honest, like, I love the Buffalo Bills. I think the Bills are a really good team. But I'm going to harp on them until they start winning these one-score games, because they have not done it over the last 2 years.
So I think that Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen both are a fascinating study in the evolving quarterback position. Because Allen doesn't run the ball as often as Jackson does, but he does run it a lot. And he takes bigger hits than Jackson. I mean, he takes big hits all the time. And I'm just curious what your thoughts are. Like, I want, because obviously some quarterbacks can play, like, you know, Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady all the way into their late 30s, early 40s. How long do you think that Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen can play quarterback at an elite level the way they play it?
You know, I think Lamar can play for – I think Lamar's got another good 5-6 years in him, which would be perfect for a contract for him, right? You know, you pay him until he's around 30 years old. He's still ridiculously young. So I think Josh Allen, because he's a bigger quarterback, I think he has a chance to play longer. What I don't like about Allen is, like you said, the hits he takes, it's the one – what was it, last week against the Titans, he's basically doing like a somersault. I'm like – dude, like, you don't need to take that hit. Like, you're a really good player. And I get it, you're in your mid-20s. You're invincible. But sooner or later, it's going to catch up with you. And I think Josh Allen does do a good job at avoiding contact sometimes. But you're right. That may be the way the quarterback position is now. These guys are bigger, stronger, faster, and you're going to get 10 elite years out of them compared to 20 good years. And that might be – unless you're Patrick Mahomes, of course. I've never seen a quarterback who knows how to slide, knows how to get out of the way of everything like Patrick Mahomes does. But overall, yeah, it just feels like if we're looking 10 to 15 years from now, the one standing may still be Mahomes. But that's why I think the window is a lot shorter for Jackson and Allen to get their Super Bowls. This is why they probably think now's the time to do that.
So who's the best team in the AFC?
Oh, man. Hey, you're putting me on the spot. How many good teams do we have right now? I think Miami had a statement win yesterday. But again, South Florida heat, 100 degrees. I saw Bills fans complain about that yesterday. You know, how the Bills were in the heat. And, I mean, you guys have seen Miami Stadium, how they basically put their home team in the shade and the away teams in the heat. So I think Miami's up there. Look, I've been saying all year, until someone knocks the Chiefs off their perch, I still think it's going to be the Chiefs. I still think the Chiefs are one of the best teams in the conference. So right now I would say Kansas City, Baltimore, Miami, Buffalo are the four I'm watching out for. The AFC South, though, I mean, I did all my overreactions and reality checks column for CBS after the Sunday game. I think Jacksonville's the best team in the AFC South right now just because of their defense and how Trevor Lawrence has been playing.
And there's always, you know, a team that we don't expect that pops up. Like last year, I mean, nobody except my co-host Nate was really touting the Bengals. And I'm not saying Jacksonville's going to go to the Super Bowl, but there's always seems to be a team that we didn't see coming. But then you can say, well, Doug Peterson's a Super Bowl winning coach, and Trevor Lawrence was the number one overall pick and a stud, and they went out and spent some money and put some weapons around him. And you can and now it makes more sense now that you're actually seeing it on the field. And so, yeah, I'm with you on Jacksonville. I think it's really interesting, and they could easily win that division. So the same question in the NFC. Who do you think is the best team in the NFC?
This one's really tough, too, because I think Tampa Bay's really good, but their offense hasn't clicked yet. Tom Brady's starting to look like a 45-year-old quarterback. But, again, let's wait till he gets his pass catchers back. You know, Mike Evans and, you know, Chris Godwin and all these guys. Let's wait till they all get healthy. I think Green Bay's getting better by the week. I think Green Bay's going to be fine because they do have Aaron Rodgers. I think the Eagles are really good. I'm not ready to crown them yet. I still think the Rams got some stuff to figure out. But, hey, they're winning games. Their only loss is to Buffalo on opening night, which – anything can happen. So right now I think I give it to Tampa Bay because of that defense, even though they did lose to Green Bay yesterday. But I think Green Bay's right up there with them.
Well, that's the matchup on Sunday Night Football, the Chiefs and the Bucks. You alluded to it at the beginning of the segment. How do you think that game plays out Sunday night in Tampa?
So I got to write about this later this week for CBS. I will be flying. Let's put it this way. I'm going to be driving so fast home from Lincoln Financial Field so I don't miss this game. So I'm looking at it as, I think that Kansas City just, if they can get the run game going, and I mean their offensive line has better run blocking, and if Clyde Edwards-Helaire and Isaiah Pacheco and those guys can get going, I think Kansas City does win this game. I think Kansas City can pass off this team. I know Tampa Bay's a hard team to pass off, but I think Kansas City can wear you down, and it just feels like Sunday night's going to be a game where you're going to see Travis Kelce versus Levante David, and I think it's going to be a fun matchup. And it just seems like one of those games Travis Kelce will we'll get ready for. I will say this. I think the Chiefs defense, too, is a lot better than people think, which is why I'm giving Kansas City the benefit of the doubt when it comes to losing against the Colts, because they only gave up 20 points. It's just the offense just didn't show up for 1 week. But I think they'll be fine. If Kansas City can get 20 to 24 points against Tampa, I think that's going to be enough.
Hey, Jeff, good stuff. Great information. You're a must-follow on Twitter, and so we'll encourage people to follow you. Jeff Kerr, CBS, is your handle, and I look forward to talking to you again real soon, man. Thank you.
Yep, sounds great. Thanks for having me on again, Steven. Appreciate it.
Hey, very good stuff from Jeff Kerr. That is a feather in Marco's cap. That's why a fresh voice, different guest. I like him a lot. He gives you, and he's an excellent follow on Twitter with the numbers and everything else, and so it. I mean, like, you know, it's almost that, like, I didn't see it before the season, but now after 3 weeks, you can talk yourself into, oh, okay, Jacksonville, that's reasonable. They've had these high draft picks on defense. They went out, they got mocked for signing Christian Kirk, but he is an upgraded receiver. They've got a nice one. They got mocked, and it was kind of a dumb pick of Travis Etienne, but now they got that 1-2 punch at running back between Robinson and Travis Etienne, and they were a handful yesterday. You can kind of squint and see, oh, okay. And look, they have a coach that knows what the hell he's doing. That's wonderful.
Isn't that funny how big of a difference that makes? Mm-hmm. There's some similarities between last year's Bengals team, you know, and this year's Jags team. Having that first-round pick quarterback's got a year under his belt.
Number one overall.
Yeah, some talent around him.
And they kicked the Chargers' ass. That was a stout. Yeah. That's what you call a statement game.
They kicked the Colts' ass.
Yeah,
they kicked it, and we didn't think that. We just thought our takeaway last week was, "Wow, look how terrible the Colts are."
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe we were looking on the wrong side of the ledger there.
Maybe we're stupid. How about that?
Well, definitely we're right. Stupid. I don't think that's a maybe.
That's right.
But that's what's so great about the NFL, man. You just you know, you don't know from week to week. I mean, I sat here on Monday and said, "How in the world could this only be a 7-point spread with the Chiefs? How can you watch these two teams play?" And Well, DraftKings took my money.
Yeah, the only redeeming fact, quality about the game was I took the under. So
yeah, I'm smart.
I got that going for me. Let's take a break. Back after this on WHB.